Chapter 135. Mr. Toots had discharged those words, as from a mortar, before he observed Walter, whom he recognized with what may be described as a chuckle of misery. "You'll excuse me, sir," said Mr. Toots, holding his forehead, "but I'm at present in that state that my brain is going, if not gone, and anything approaching to politeness in an individual so situated would be a hollow mockery. Captain Gills, I beg to request the favor of a private interview." "Why, brother," returned the captain, taking him by the hand, "you are the man as we was on the lookout for."
Captain Gills, said Mr. Toots, "what a lookout that must be, of which I am the object. I haven't dared to shave, I'm in that rash state. I haven't had my clothes brushed. My hair is matted together. I told the chicken that if he offered to clean my boots, I'd stretch him a corpse before me." All these indications of a disordered mind were verified in Mr. Toots' appearance, which was wild and savage. "See here, brother," said the captain. "This here's old soul Gills Nevey Waller. Him as was supposed to have perished at sea." Mr. Toots took his hand from his forehead and stared at Walter. "Good gracious me!" stammered Mr. Toots. "What a complication of misery! How do you? I'm afraid you must have got very wet. Captain Gills, will you allow me a word in the shop?" He took the captain by the coat, and going out with him whispered. "That then, Captain Gills, is the party you spoke of, when you said that he and Miss Dombey were made for one another?"
"Why, eh, my lad," replied the disconsolate captain, "I was of that mind once."
"And at this time?"
exclaimed Mr. Toots, with his hand to his forehead again. "Of all others, a hated rival. At least, he ain't a hated rival," said Mr. Toots, stopping short, on second thoughts, and taking away his hand. "What should I hate him for? No. If my affection has been truly disinterested, Captain Gills, let me prove it now."
Mr. Toots shot back abruptly into the parlor and said, wringing Walter by the hand, "How do you? I hope you didn't take any cold. I shall be very glad if you will give me the pleasure of your acquaintance. I wish you many happy returns of the day."
"Upon my word and honor," said Mr. Toots, warming as he became better acquainted with Walter's face and figure, "I'm very glad to see you."
"Thank you, heartily," said Walter. "I couldn't desire a more genuine and genial welcome."
"Couldn't you, though?"
said Mr. Toots, still shaking his hand. "It's very kind of you. I'm much obliged to you. How do you? I hope you left everybody quite well over the, that is, upon the, I mean wherever you came from last, you know."
All these good wishes, and better intentions, Walter responded to manfully.
"Captain Gills," said Mr. Toots, "I should wish to be strictly honorable, but I trust I may be allowed now to allude to a certain subject that returned the captain.
Freely.
Then, Captain Gills," said Mr. Toots, "and Lieutenant Walters, are you aware that the most dreadful circumstances have been happening at Mr. Dombey's house, and that Miss Dombey herself has left her father, who, in my opinion," said Mr. Toots, with great excitement, "is a brute, that it would be a flattery to call a marble monument, or a bird of prey, and that she is not to be found, and has gone no one knows where?"
"May I ask how you heard this?"
Inquired Walter.
"Lieutenant Walters," said Mr. Toots, who had arrived at that appellation by a process peculiar to himself, probably by jumbling up his Christian name with the seafaring profession, and supposing some relationship between him and the captain, which would extend, as a matter of course, to their titles,
Lieutenant Walters, I can have no objection to make a straightforward reply. The fact is, that feeling extremely interested in everything that relates to Miss Dombey, not for any selfish reason, Lieutenant Walters, for I am well aware that the most able thing I could do for all parties would be to put an end to my existence, which can only be regarded as an inconvenience I have been in the habit of bestowing a trifle now and then upon a footman, a most respectable young man, of the name of Towlinson, who has lived in the family some time, and Towlinson informed me yesterday evening that this was the state of things. Since which, Captain Gills and Lieutenant Walters, I have been perfectly frantic, and have been lying down on the sofa all night, the ruin you behold. Apostrophe, Mr. Toots, apostrophe, said Walter, I am happy to be able to relieve your mind. Pray calm yourself. Miss Dombey is safe and well. Apostrophe, sir. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mr. Toots, starting from his chair and shaking hands with him anew. The relief is so excessive and unspeakable that if you were to tell me now that Miss Dombey was married even, I could smile. Yes, Captain Gills, apostrophe, said Mr. Toots, appealing to him, upon my soul and body, I really think, whatever I might do to myself immediately afterwards, that I could smile, I am so relieved. Apostrophe, it will be a greater relief and delight still, to such a generous mind as yours, apostrophe, said Walter, not at all slow in returning his greeting, to find that you can render service to Miss Dombey. Captain Cuttle, will you have the kindness to take Mr. Toots upstairs? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the captain beckoned to Mr. Toots, who followed him with a bewildered countenance, and, ascending to the top of the house, was introduced, without a word of preparation from his conductor, into Florence's new retreat. Poor Mr. Toots' amazement and pleasure at sight of her were such that they could find a vent in nothing but extravagance. He ran up to her, seized her hand, kissed it, dropped it, seized it again, fell upon one knee, shed tears, chuckled, and was quite regardless of his danger of being pinned by Diogenes, who, inspired by the belief that there was something hostile to his mistress in these demonstrations, worked round and round him, as if only undecided at what particular point to go in for the assault, but quite resolved to do him a fearful mischief. Oh, Di, you bad, forgetful dog! Dear Mr. Toots, I am so rejoiced to see you. Apostrophe, apostrophe, thank ye, apostrophe, said Mr. Toots, I am pretty well, I'm much obliged to you, Miss Dombey. I hope all the family are the same. Apostrophe, Mr. Toots said this without the least notion of what he was talking about, and sat down on a chair, staring at Florence with the liveliest contention of delight and despair going on in his face that any face could exhibit. Captain Gills and Lieutenant Walters have mentioned, Miss Dombey, apostrophe, gasped Mr. Toots, that I can do you some service. If I could by any means wash out the remembrance of that day at Brighton, when I conducted myself much more like a parasite than a person of independent property, apostrophe, said Mr. Toots, with severe self-accusation, I should sink into the silent tomb with a gleam of joy. Apostrophe, pray, Mr. Toots, apostrophe, said Florence, do not wish me to forget anything in our acquaintance. I never can, believe me. You have been far too kind and good to me always. Apostrophe, Miss Dombey, apostrophe, returned Mr. Toots, your consideration for my feelings is a part of your angelic character. Thank you a thousand times. It's of no consequence at all. Apostrophe, what we thought of asking you, apostrophe, said Florence, is whether you remember where Susan, whom you were so kind as to accompany to the coach office when she left me, is to be found. Apostrophe, why I do not certainly, Miss Dombey, apostrophe, said Mr. Toots, after a little consideration, remember the exact name of the place that was on the coach, and I do recollect that she said she was not going to stop there, but was going farther on. But, Miss Dombey, if your object is to find her, and to have her here, myself and the chicken will produce her with every dispatch, that devotion on my part, and great intelligence on the chicken's, can ensure. Mr. Toots was so manifestly delighted, and revived by the prospect of being useful, and the disinterested sincerity of his devotion was so unquestionable, that it would have been cruel to refuse him. Florence, with an instinctive delicacy, forbore to urge the least obstacle, though she did not forbear to overpower him with thanks, and Mr. Toots proudly took the commission upon himself for immediate execution. Miss Dombey, said Mr. Toots, touching her proffered hand, with a pang of hopeless love visibly shooting through him, and flashing out in his face, goodbye. Allow me to take the liberty of saying, that your misfortunes make me perfectly wretched, and that you may trust me, next to Captain Gills himself. I am quite aware, Miss Dombey, of my own deficiencies. They are not of the least consequence, thank you, but I am entirely to be relied upon, I do assure you, Miss Dombey. With that Mr. Toots came out of the room, again accompanied by the captain, who, standing at a little distance, holding his hat under his arm, and arranging his scattered locks with his hook, had been a not uninterested witness of what passed. And when the door closed behind them, the light of Mr. Toots' life was darkly clouded again. Captain Gills, said that gentleman, stopping near the bottom of the stairs, and turning round, to tell you the truth, I am not in a frame of mind at the present moment, in which I could see Lieutenant Walters with that entirely friendly feeling towards him, that I should wish to harbor in my breast. We cannot always command our feelings, Captain Gills, and I should take it as a particular favor, if you'd let me out at the private door. Returned the captain, you shall shape your own course. Whatever course you take, is plain and seamanlike, I'm worry sure. Captain Gills, said Mr. Toots, you're extremely kind. Your good opinion is a consolation to me. There is one thing, said Mr. Toots, standing in the passage, behind the half-open door, that I hope you will bear in mind, Captain Gills, and that I should wish Lieutenant Walters, to be made acquainted with. I have quite come into my property now, you know, and I don't know what to do with it. If I could be at all useful in a pecuniary point of view, I should glide into the silent tomb with ease and smoothness. Mr. Toots said no more, but slipped out quietly, and shut the door upon himself, to cut the captain off from any reply. Florence thought of this good creature, long after he had left her, with mingled emotions of pain and pleasure. He was so honest and warm-hearted, that to see him again, and be assured of his truth to her in her distress, was a joy and comfort beyond all price. But for that very reason, it was so affecting to think, that she caused him a moment's unhappiness, ruffled, by a breath, the harmless current of his life, that her eyes filled with tears, and her bosom overflowed with pity. Captain Cuttle, in his different way, thought much of Mr. Toots too, and so did Walter, and when the evening came, and they were all sitting together in Florence's new room, Walter praised him in the most impassioned manner, and told Florence what he had said on leaving the house, with every graceful setting off in the way of comment and appreciation, that his own honesty and sympathy could surround it with. Mr. Toots did not return upon the next day, or the next, or for several days, and in the meanwhile Florence, without any new alarm, lived like a quiet bird in a cage, at the top of the old instrument maker's house. But Florence drooped, and hung her head more and more plainly, as the days went on, and the expression, that had been seen in the face of the dead child, was often turned to the sky from her high window, as if it sought his angel out, on the bright shore of which he had spoken, lying on his little bed. Florence had been weak and delicate of late, and the agitation she had undergone was not without its influences on her health. But it was no bodily illness that affected her now. She was distressed in mind, and the cause of her distress was Walter. interested in her, anxious for her, proud and glad to serve her, and showing all this with the enthusiasm and ardor of his character, Florence saw that he avoided her. All the long day through, he seldom approached her room. If she asked for him, he came, again for the moment as earnest, and as bright as she remembered him, when she was a lost child in the staring streets. But he soon became constrained. Her quick affection was too watchful, not too known and uneasy, and soon left her. Unsought, he never came, all day, between the morning and the night. When the evening closed in, he was always there, and that was her happiest time, for then she half believed that the old Walter of her childhood was not changed. But, even then, some trivial word, look, or circumstance would show her that there was an indefinable division between them which could not be passed. And she could not but see that these revealings of a great alteration in Walter manifested themselves in despite of his utmost efforts to hide them. In his consideration for her, she thought, and in the earnestness of his desire to spare her any wound from his kind hand, he resorted to innumerable little artifices and disguises. So much the more did Florence feel the greatness of the alteration in him, so much the oftener did she weep at this estrangement of her brother. The good captain, her untiring, tender, ever zealous friend, saw it too, Florence thought, and it pained him. He was less cheerful and hopeful than he had been at first, and would steal looks at her and Walter, by turns, when they were all three together of an evening, with quite a sad face. Florence resolved, at last, to speak to Walter. She believed she knew now what the cause of his estrangement was, and she thought it would be a relief to her full heart, and would set him more at ease, if she told him she had found it out, and quite submitted to it, and did not reproach him. It was on a certain Sunday afternoon that Florence took this resolution. The faithful captain, in an amazing shirt collar, was sitting by her, reading with his spectacles on, and she asked him where Walter was. "I think he's down below, my lady lass," apostrophe returned the captain. "I should like to speak to him," apostrophe said Florence, rising hurriedly as if to go downstairs. "I'll rouse him up here, beauty," apostrophe said the captain, in a trice. Apostrophe, thereupon the captain, with much alacrity, shouldered his book, for he made it a point of duty to read none but very large books on the Sunday, as having a more staid appearance, and had bargained, years ago, for a prodigious volume at a bookstall, five lines of which utterly confounded him at any time, insomuch that he had not yet ascertained of what subject it treated, and withdrew. Walter soon appeared. "Captain Cuttle tells me, Miss Dombey," apostrophe he eagerly began on coming in, but stopped when he saw her face. "You are not so well today. You look distressed. You have been weeping," apostrophe he spoke so kindly, and with such a fervent tremor in his voice. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.